The Hoop Heads podcast is brought to you by Head Start Basketball.
I think that when Jeff first started playing, he was really more interested in the social aspects of, you know, being on a team and being involved. And I don't really think he saw himself as a basketball player as a young kid. He wanted to be with his friends and, you know, to get back to what he was saying earlier about his mom and her reaction to one of the games early on. What she actually said was, she said to me, you know, listen, I don't want to burst your bubble, but I don't think Jeff's going to be a very good basketball player. Says, you know what? I said, that's fine. If he doesn't like basketball, that's okay with me. If he likes something else, as long as he has a passion for something, that's all I care about.
I definitely knew and appreciated everything that my dad was willing to share with me and teach me about how to play. But now that I'm a coach, I appreciate this even more. Like, he never once did anything to ever undermine what my high school coach was teaching or doing. Like, after games, we would do, I read this in a Grant Hill book. He would get his PGAs, his post-game analysis from his dad. And I would get the same thing, but it was never like, what the heck was he thinking running that? Or what, he's using you the wrong. It was always like constructive stuff about how I was playing and how I could do better.
On this special family edition of the Hoop Heads podcast, friend of the pod, Jeff DePelto from Christ School in North Carolina, hops back on the show with his father, Ray, to talk about their experiences in the game together. We'll discuss how Ray handled being a basketball parent when Jeff was young, and what it was like when they coached together at Suffield Academy early on in Jeff's coaching career. Leave us a 5-star rating and review on iTunes, and starting this month, February 2019, we'll have a monthly Hoopheads Pod t-shirt drawing for all our listeners that leave a 5-star rating and review. You'll get one entry into the drawing for leaving a review, and we'll post a video of the drawing on social media on March 1st. There are some great insights that you don't want to miss, so make sure you have your notebook out as you listen to this episode of the Hoopheads Podcast with our very first father and son guests, Ray and Jeff DePelto.
Hello, and welcome to the Hoopheads Podcast. It's Mike Klinzing here with my co-host, Jason Sunkel. Tonight, we have a first on the show, a father-son tandem, Jeff and Ray DePelto. Jeff from Christ School in North Carolina, who has been with us before, and his father, Ray. Guys, welcome.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, it's going to be a lot of fun. Again, our first father-son duo, so excited to kind of go back and reminisce with the two of you and kind of talk about the relationship that you guys have had through the game over your lifetime. So, Ray, we're going to start with you, and we've already kind of got Jeff's background the last time, if you were with us and listened to Jeff's episode that we recorded.
And we'll link that episode in the show notes so you guys can go back and listen to that as well.
But, Ray, we'll start with you and talk a little bit about your history as a basketball player and what you remember from your early days and your childhood getting into the game of basketball for the first time.
All right. Well, I guess my career started in junior high school. I played basketball. I realized it was something that I really liked. And as a result, you know, I worked hard at trying to make myself a better player. And that was at St. Peter's Grammar School. And then from there, I went to a Catholic high school in Danbury, Connecticut, Immaculate High School. And actually, I was, my class was actually the second graduating class from Immaculate. So it was a brand new school. They were really just getting started with their programs. And the players that all played together over those 4 years, we really developed a strong bond, and we got better as a team. We had really terrific coaches that emphasized the fundamentals. I mean, I think Jeff would tell you that physically, I'm not a very imposing person, even though I'm 6'4". I think when I was in high school, I weighed about 165 pounds. because the coaches really emphasized fundamentals, I really was a terrific rebounder, and I used my body well in terms of boxing out and then going after the basketball. And I was also fortunate to have long arms. I'm 6'4", but I probably have the arms of somebody that's probably 6'8" or 6'9". So that certainly helped in rebounding.
Good thing Jay Billis doesn't know about you back then. He would have been talking about your wingspan.
There you go. But I'd say my sophomore year, I basically played JV basketball. But I think I made an impression on the coaches early in the season playing JV. And what I would do is I'd play the whole JV game, and then I would sit on the bench for the varsity games. And I think back then they had a rule that you could play varsity even if you had played in the JV game. But I started playing in the varsity games and was making a contribution. And so about mid-season, I'd say I started playing just in the varsity games. And I had a this goes sort of to the coaches and sort of knowing their players, knowing the kids. I probably had a bad day at school on this one particular day. And one of the assistant coaches came to me and said, "Hey, Ray, what's wrong? What's happening?" And, you know, I really didn't have an answer for him, but he said, "Listen, come down the other end with me." And we went down the other end of the court, and he just started working with me on a hook shot. I played center in high school. We didn't really have a lot of big players. So at 6'3", 6'4", I was the center. And so anyway, he taught me how to shoot a hook shot. And essentially that was my offense in high school. I was sort of a garbage player. I, you know, got the miss shots, and, you know, in the offense, if I got the ball down low, I'd take basically a step and had sort of like a Kareem hook shot. Now it's the jump hooks that the kids shoot, but we didn't have that back in the day.
So if you think about your time when you were in junior high, high school, and you look at, you know, one of the things that I always find to be interesting is just the different ways that kids are brought up in the game. And so could you talk a little bit about your time away from your school team and just how you practiced, how you got better, and just what you did outside of your school team to improve yourself as a player?
Well, you know, what was interesting, back then, everybody warned you against lifting weights because there was a concern that it was somehow going to affect your shot. So nobody really used weights. But the one thing that a lot of people did was they used the ankle weights to try and strengthen their legs and help their jumping ability. I really remember sort of the summers working really hard. We were like many families back then, a one-car family, and my dad worked in a town about 30 miles away. So he was usually gone 6:30 in the morning, come back fairly late at night. And so if we wanted to go anywhere, we had to walk. And I would typically, during the summer, I would walk to the next town. I'd walk from Danbury to Bethel, which was about 10 miles away, to the playgrounds there, because I knew there was always games all day long. And so I'd walk to Bethel, I'd play for most of the day, and then I'd walk home. And I would do that probably 5 or 6 days a week during the summer months.
So yeah, it's totally a different, I mean, it's just, I mean, Jeff, you can attest to this. It's such a different way of kids playing today because nobody's playing outdoors. Certainly, let's put it this way. I don't know that there's too many kids anywhere walking 10 miles to go play outdoor basketball anymore. Yeah. You know, everybody's playing, you know, on an AU circuit in an indoor gym and has a trainer or, you know, is working out that different ways as opposed to the way that I or you, Ray, grew up where you're playing outside and finding pickup games and that kind of thing. So it's a totally different world today.
Yeah, without question. So that was pretty much how I spent my summer, though. I loved the game and I played as much as possible. And, you know, the one thing I think that's a little bit different back then, though, was you did find time to play other sports. As much as you might like one individual sport, you weren't being forced to sort of dedicate yourself to a single sport so early in your life. And I think that's one thing that's a little bit of a tragedy these days, that kids are being forced to make such a choice so early in their life. You know, if they have a real aptitude, if you will, for basketball or football or baseball, it seems like if they want to take it to another level, they have to do it year round and eliminate the other sports that they might also enjoy playing. And who knows, they might also be very, very good at.
Yeah. There's a lot of pressure, I think, on kids, and even more so, I think, on parents from other parents who look around and they think that their kid's falling behind because they don't have a personal trainer in a particular sport, or they just, you know, they don't have that specialization. They, oh, my kid's got to do that. My kid's got to be on this team and they got to play year round. And if they're not playing 80 baseball games in a summer, then they're not going to have an opportunity to be, you know, to be a pitcher or to be a shortstop at the high school level, or, you know, to be a point guard as a high school basketball player. And it's really unfortunate. One of the things that I see sometimes around here is, you know, coaches from particular sports will put pressure on a kid who might want to play two sports in high school and just doesn't have that opportunity. And that's where I think the real shame comes in. It's one thing if the kid's making that choice, you know, it's another thing if the high school coach is putting pressure on the kid to only be a one sport athlete. And I think that's where sometimes you run into trouble when kids aren't the ones that are getting to make that choice.
Yeah. Yeah, very true.
So Jeff, do you see, I mean, I know we talked about it a little bit before, but just in your experiences, have you seen more of that where you have more of the one sport athletes that you see, not maybe necessarily at your school, but just in general in high school basketball or high school sports?
Yeah, absolutely. I think, even from when I was in high school, which wasn't all that long ago, it was almost like, well, if you want to play it at the college level, then you've got to think about specializing. But beyond that, like, I had a lot of friends who played multi-sports, whether it was, you know, playing track or running track, cross country, you know, playing lacrosse, football. I mean, my high school team was made up of guys that were definitely committed to basketball, but they also kind of got their hands dirty in a lot of different things. And I think it was a result of parents encouraging it. And now it's like, I think even to make your own high school teams, there's that mantra like, nope, you gotta be committed to it all year round. And I think being in the boarding school world helps with that a little bit, because we tend to be in small schools that, you know, if you've got 400 kids in a school, you need everybody to participate in different things. And so that is definitely fighting against the current culture of today, but it's nice to be in an environment where we're holding on to it as much as we can.
Yeah. I wish there was, again, more of an opportunity. I think part of it goes back to, Ray, what you said, which is that when you grew up, you were playing outside, whether it was on the baseball diamond or walking to the courts or whatever it might've been. And therefore you were playing lots of sports as a kid. Whereas today, you know, a kid, by the time you get to second or third grade, they're already on a travel team, or, you know, they're getting ready to play on an AAU team. And I actually had a friend of mine who called me up yesterday, the day before, and he had some conversations that he overheard. And one was with a parent of a kid who was in third grade. And this parent was talking to another parent about the AAU team that their child was going to be playing on. And the two parents were discussing back and forth, and one parent's like, well, where are you guys going to play? Now, keep in mind, we're in Ohio. And this guy's like, well, we're going to Vegas, and we're going to Maryland, and we're going to go to Indiana. And, you know, we're going to play in a tournament in Kentucky. And like, these kids are nine. And to me, it's just, that piece of it is crazy. And that's where you get into, again, those people, if you're spending all that money and you're going there, you're looking at specializing your kid already at that young age. And to me, that's crazy. And then one of the other parents that was sitting in this conversation was telling somebody that he coaches a third grade team. And he said, well, it's the responsibility of the third graders and their parents to work on their basketball skills outside of my team practices. At my team practices, I have to teach them plays and pressing, because, you know, we have to win games. I can't be worried about, you know, teaching them the fundamentals and having them practice those kinds of things. That they got to do that on their own. When they're with me, I got to teach them team concepts like plays and zone defenses and presses. And my friend who relayed this story to me was like, He goes, this was the most appalling conversation that I've ever been a part of in youth basketball. And it was crazy. It blew my mind that people are actually thinking this way.
Well, and that makes me think of, so there's this, like we laugh about it now in our house, but there was a story. And I think if the culture then is what it is now, I don't know that I would have made it to playing high school basketball. But my dad was coaching me, I think it was fifth and sixth grade basketball. And at the time, I was not very good. I don't think I took it that seriously. I played because I liked it and probably because my friends were there and my dad was coaching me. But my mom said to my dad after one of the games, and I learned this about this story when I was maybe like 20, 22 years old. But she's like, she said to him, like, he's not very good. Do you think we should maybe like push him in another direction? And it just hadn't clicked. But at that point, like, I don't even know what I was interested in, but I definitely wasn't that serious about it. And you're making these kids, and I mean, I go through it now. If there's kids that I work out, like there's an 8-year-old boy that I work out, and like for him, I just want him to leave every workout with a smile on his face and wanting to come back and play again. But it's not like his parents come into the workouts talking about, oh, well, this didn't go well in his game, and this was hard, and he had trouble. And it's like, it's a little bit sad that, like, that's how parents are driven to think at this point for a kid who's in second, third grade, you know?
Yeah, they're already analyzing every single aspect of their performance. And to me, you talk about taking the joy away from a kid that, you know, you think about, again, Ray, the way you grow up, the way I grew up, the way you're playing out on the playground or you're playing in the driveway with your friends, like the reason why you walked 10 miles to go play wasn't because you were driven to improve your left hand or you wanted to, you know, get better at defending off the ball. You went and did all those things because you loved to play and it was fun. And I think that's something that unfortunately in many circumstances now is missing for kids.
Yeah, you know what, Mike? I think that's absolutely true. I think that coaches, in a lot of ways, have sort of taken the fun out of the game, and we forget that it's supposed to be fun. And I was talking with a friend of mine from high school not that long ago, and we were sort of reminiscing about how much fun, actually, even though it was, you know, it was very serious. Work, if you will, you know, when we were seniors in high school, we really had a very good team and we expected to do well. But our coach made every day a fun day. And there was always a time during a practice where we had a laugh, you know, and we might have really busted our ass throughout most of the practice, but he'd find a way to do something that would get everybody to laugh and loosen up a little bit.
Yeah, I think that's a great thing to have. I know I tell people this story. I've told it before, but when I was at Kent State and I was playing, and one of the things that I always felt like we didn't do a good job of, our coaching staff, was taking advantage of those moments to make things fun. And I could say that, you know, I love the games, but there were days where practice was just, you know, it wasn't fun. And we had one time where we were practicing and a kid's shoe while we were playing, one of my teammates, his shoe, like basically the sole he cut and the sole of the shoe like ripped, and it made this huge farting noise. Like it was, I mean, it was super loud. And it was one of those times where everybody should have been laughing and basically falling on the floor. It was just, you know, one of those immature, silly moments that, you know, if you were a coach, you would take it. And I remember it happened and everybody, all of us just stopped, assistant coaches, players, and everybody kind of looked at our head coach to see what his reaction was going to be. And he just kind of stood there completely stoic. And so for like 3 seconds, there was this awkward silence. And then it was like it never happened. We just continued on with practice. And that's one of those things that stuck with me of, you know, here was an opportunity where it was not something where we weren't working hard, where we weren't taking things seriously. It was just a funny moment that happened, you know, in that intimate little setting. And we just didn't take advantage of it to make it fun. And I think that's something that as a coach, you've got to take advantage, to your point, Ray, of those fun moments. That's what the game is all about. If you're playing the game and it's not fun, then I'm not sure there's a point to why anybody would want to play, especially an 8, 9, 10 year old kid.
Yeah, exactly.
So when my dad was helping me out at Suffield Academy, we would shoot free throws, and we would, the kids had to shoot a certain percentage or they had to run. And so, my dad worked in finance for years, and he would be doing the free throw percentages on the dry erase board in the gym. And like, you talk about the age of the kids, but he was like basically teaching them how to do long division because they hadn't done it in school. Just calculator. And these were smart kids. Like, we had three kids from that team that year that went to Amherst College. Like, I mean, top school in the country. And he's there going long, doing long division with them to figure out if they need to run or not at practice. It was like a very laughable moment almost every day.
That's hilarious. I know one of the things that always cracks me up is, and as a teacher, this is something that amazes me. I don't know about you, Ray, or you, Jeff, but when I was a kid, like, I learned percentages by calculating and looking at batting averages and free throw percentages and looking at the backs of baseball or basketball cards. And so that's from statistics and sports. That's how I learned a lot of basic math, averages, whatever. And I'm amazed, my own kids included, that kids today, you know, you're like, oh, the guy went 6 for 8 from the free throw line. What percentage is that? And they have no idea. And that was one of those things that I just, you know, I mean, I probably had memorized what every percentage was up through, you know, 100 based on what the, you know, what I shot from the line. And kids today just don't do that same thing. It's incredible.
Well, if we go back,
Ray, to your time in high school, and you had an opportunity to continue on and play college basketball, can you talk a little bit about how you went from and transitioned from your high school career and and got to Bryant College, how you made that transition? First of all, how you chose your school, and then what the transition was like from high school to college basketball.
Okay. It's sort of funny. As I said earlier, we thought we were going to have a pretty good season my senior year. And in fact, we did. We finished the season at 20-3. One of the games, the quarterfinal game of the state tournament, a guy by the name of Bill Stein happened to be in the stands. And Bill was an assistant coach at Bryant College. And he was from Waterbury, Connecticut. His family was from Waterbury. And even though he was in Rhode Island, his family would send him newspaper clippings and stuff like that for all of the area teams in Western Connecticut. And so, you know, in high school, my name was in the box scores quite often. And so he was at the game for this quarterfinal game of the state tournament, which turned out to be the best high school game that I played in my career. So
good timing, Ray.
It was pretty good timing. Back then, nobody talked about triple doubles, but that's what I ended up having in that game. I had 33 points, 20 rebounds, and I blocked 14 shots, which is almost unheard of. So he thought if they could entice me to go to Bryant, that they were probably getting a pretty good player. And so after the game, he came, talked to me about Bryant, asked me to just, because I was almost set on going to New Haven. And he said, you know, before you make a commitment, please come up and see the campus and meet some of the players. And then he says, if you're not interested in Bryant, that's fine. And so I did. I went to Bryant for a weekend visit, was really impressed with the school and the people that I met. And they also were transitioning. At the time, Bryant was actually in Providence. They were located right next to Brown University, but they were going to be moving the campus out to Smithfield, Rhode Island. The guy that invented Tupperware donated 40 acres of land in Smithfield to the school, and they built a new campus out there, which they moved out there actually in my junior year. So the visit is really what convinced me to go to Bryant. And, it's not a decision certainly that I regretted. It was a great school, a great place to be. Bill Stein was the assistant coach, as I said. Tom Folliard was the head coach. Both of them had played at Providence and were good basketball guys. And Bill really worked with me a lot. He knew that I just loved the game. I was really a gym rat. I loved being in the gym. I loved working on my game. And he really worked with me to develop a shot. You know, I actually found out when I was a freshman that I actually could shoot the ball and I didn't have to, you know, shoot hook shots. And so I just worked on it and worked on it. And I actually really developed into, you know, a very good shooter.
So what was the transition like? Obviously at that time, freshmen were ineligible to play. So what would you say, if you can remember back to that time, what was the biggest adjustment that you had to make, or what was the biggest change from playing at the high school level to playing at the college level for you?
Well, I'd say size and speed. You know, the game was just so much faster than the high school game. You know, in high school, it seemed like a basket would be scored and it almost felt like at times you were going in slow motion. You really weren't, but it sort of felt like that in getting back on defense, let's say. In the college game, it was like the ball would go through the hoop and it'd already be outletted and guys were racing down the court. So that was a real big adjustment to you know, sort of speed up almost everything you were doing. And then just the physicality of it. You know, college was definitely a much more physical game. And I probably weighed 168 then. So, but over
time, they still didn't have that weight room going.
No. Although I think people started to think about weightlifting a little bit differently. It was more targeted, and they were trying to, you know, strengthen kids again. But there was still that concern that somehow it was going to affect your shot. It's obvious nobody told LeBron that.
Yeah, nobody's told any of these guys this, you know, in today's era that's the case. It's kind of amazing. Like, Jeff, what do you guys do in terms of your physical conditioning? Like, what's the status there at Christ School in terms of, do you guys have like a full-time strength and conditioning person? How do you handle that aspect of your program?
We do. We actually have two people that are strength and conditioning coaches. Our football coach is a strength and conditioning coach, and then our associate athletic director, and he works mostly with our team, but in season we work out twice a week. So Mondays and Thursdays are typically our lifting days. So we lifted today. I mean, we've got a state tournament game on Thursday, and our guys were doing hex squats today, and they got after it pretty good. And then we went on a full practice right after. So we don't shy away from that. Later in the season, it's definitely been more, you know, as we get into it and we're playing three games a week, it's definitely been more dynamic stretching and kind of body maintenance more than putting up weights. But when we have weeks where we've got, you know, 2-3 days before we play a game, the boys will be throwing some weights around, and they're not afraid to do it.
How long do you typically spend? Like, how long is a session for you 30, when you guys are training during the season?
In season, it's probably 30 to 45 minutes max, but they're going the whole time. I would say it's just as much cardio work as it is strength work, because they go from, it's basically three different supersets where they'll squat and then they'll, you know, do something with the TRX bands. And, luckily I don't have to put any of that stuff together, cause I get lost in the weight room, but Duncan Parham, is absolutely phenomenal. So the Plumlee brothers played at Christ School, and he got very close with the strength and conditioning coach at Duke University when the Plumlees went there. And so he oftentimes will take trips out there, pick his brain, and we're just so lucky here. We opened up a brand new athletic space addition last year, and he got kind of a clean slate to design his ideal strength space. And so we've got this amazing space that he gets to work with. He's basically got a blank canvas that he can do whatever he wants with teams, and it's awesome. Our kids are so lucky.
Yeah, that's a fantastic resource to be able to have, A, the facilities, and then B, somebody that can take that off your plate as a basketball coach, somebody who knows what they're doing and can get your kids doing the things that they need to do in order to, you know, strengthen them, the functional strength. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it even goes back to, I think about the times when I was training, and, you know, that was whatever the late 80s, early 90s. And, you know, a lot of the stuff that we were doing wasn't as functional based as the things that guys are doing now. And even you think about from what we talked about a few minutes ago, the, you know, NBA guys today and the way that they're training. And, you know, it's not just I'm doing, you know, curls and bench presses. You know, I'm actually doing things and doing movements that I'm going to perform in a game. So to have somebody there as a resource for you has got to be just a, you know, a tremendous benefit to your program. How does it transition, like in your off season? What do your off season workouts look like in terms of number of days per week or how long the sessions are? How do you set up your off season work? And then obviously your kids are gone in the summertime, but while you have them on campus, what does that look like, let's say in the preseason and then in the spring when your season's over?
Preseason in the spring, the kids are lifting 3 to 4 days a week and they'll split up body parts. So they're not doing full body workout. The timing is not much different than the season. It'll be closer to 45 minutes. But it's pretty intense. Definitely you're adding more weight and looking to add some mass. But it's all functional. It's all, you know, basketball specific and, you know, trying to build in some speed and agility within, not just like throwing weight around, but you're trying to make it as functional as possible. And then it's a lot more skill work based. So the way North Carolina independent schools are set up during the off season, it's basically bookended with dead periods where we can't work with the kids and they're kind of on their own, either student led practices. They can do stuff in the weight room. They can condition. But as far as the basketball stuff, we can't do any kind of teaching. But then we get these 6 week windows where we can teach. And in the preseason, there's probably a little bit more work done in those teaching periods of strategy and things that we'll want to build up to. But it still is a lot of individual skill development work. And in the postseason, it's really almost exclusively skill development. And in our postseason, we really, unless college coaches are coming in to evaluate our guys, they're really only playing and getting up and down 1 day a week because they play enough during AAU stuff that we spend a lot of time just trying to get them better.
It's funny how every state, the rules are so different. Like we talked to Scott Roussatz from Kentucky, and basically in Kentucky, you can do pretty much whatever you want. They can work with their kids year round as many days as you want. And of course he's right across the river from Cincinnati in Ohio, where here in Ohio, you get like 10 contact days, you know, during the summer where you can do stuff with your kids. And I'm like, well, how jealous are the guys across the river in Cincinnati that you get to work with your kids, you know, basically nonstop. And he's like, yeah, they're really jealous. So it's amazing just again, how the different, you know, high school associations in the States kind of set up their situation and, you know, just how everybody's different.
Yeah, and I don't know if it's changed, but I mean, growing up in Massachusetts, high school coaches out of season could have zero contact. So, like, my high school coach, he would come to all of our summer league games and stuff, but this is where, like, my friends and I were so lucky. Like, we had my father who played, and we had a couple other fathers who played and were still playing. And so, like, we could go watch them play in men's league games, and they could still hoop, and there would be days where they would, like, come and play with us and against us. And they probably beat us more times than we would care to admit, you know, in their 40s and in their 50s. But they also would coach us in our summer league games. And so it wasn't like we were just playing. We were learning and we were getting coached throughout the year. And I think everybody had a good enough relationship with our high school coach that it wasn't like our parents that were coaching us were trying to reinvent the wheel. Like everything worked together. We were running the same stuff that we were running in the high school season and just kind of continually getting better. And it was a year-long process. But we were just, again, lucky to have parents that despite the state association rules were able to teach us and help us get better and had the time and committed the time to helping us get better.
Yeah, it's great that you have somebody there that when that's the situation that knows the game and that can, you know, try to teach it in the right way and try to, you know, go along with what the coach in high school was trying to do. So Ray, let's go. And I want to touch on one thing before we start talking about you coaching Jeff as a young kid and kind of how you went about helping him in his basketball career. I know Jeff mentioned that you had an opportunity to play against Ernie DiGregorio and Marvin Bad News Barnes when they were at Providence College. So can you just throw us a memory or two from getting an opportunity to play against those guys who kind of have two famous names in the history of basketball?
Yeah. Sure. Those were actually great times. They would come to our gym in Smithfield in the off season, because at Providence, while they could get on the court and play, it was sort of like playground ball. You know, if they happen to lose a game, they'd have to sit out, and maybe they'd have to sit out for 4 or 5 games. And because there were always so many kids in the gym and wanting to play. So we told them if they came over to our gym and played, if they happened to get beat, they'd only have to sit out for 1 game.
Nice bribe.
Yeah. But honestly, they all came, you know, Marvin Barnes, Ernie DiRugario, Charlie Crawford, Nehru King. I know I'm missing some other really good players. Oh, Kevin Stakem. They were, my senior year, they were ranked number 4 in the country. And I don't know if you remember this, but they got on a huge roll. I mean, they had a great season, but they got on a huge roll at the end of the season and were playing phenomenally well. And everybody thought when they hit the NCAA tournament that they were on a collision course, that they were going to meet UCLA in the final. And at the time, Bill Walton was at UCLA. And they got to the semifinal game, and they were playing Memphis State. And Marvin Barnes turned his knee in the first half when Providence was up like 18 in the first half. And they basically, Providence, the rest of the game was really just trying to slow the game down, and they got out of rhythm. Of course, they didn't have Marvin Barnes in there. And, you know, Memphis State ended up, you know, beating them. I don't know if it was at the buzzer, but they beat him in a close game right at the end. And everybody was really looking forward to that matchup of Marvin Barnes against Bill Walton. That would have been a phenomenal final. And, of course, the final, Bill Walton ended up getting the MVP. If you remember, he was 21 for 22 from the floor. And
yeah, that might have been one of the best college games anybody's ever played.
Yeah, it was phenomenal. And of course, they won the national championship.
Yeah, that's cool that you got an opportunity again as a small college player to be able to compete against the, you know, guys that were playing at a higher level. And I'm sure, it was a lot of fun, because it sounds like just like anybody who's playing at that, you know, in the college ranks is a competitor. So you get a chance to test yourself against some really good players, and I'm sure it helped make you better. And those are things that I think that kids today in a lot of ways miss out on that. And from a standpoint of, you know, growing up, they always play against kids their own age and, you know, with an official, and they don't play as much pickup games, you know, as they did back in our day. And they don't play, you know, out on the playground where they have to stand up for themselves and against kids of different ages and even adults. And that's one of the things that I always lament for my own kids and kind of kids in this era, that they don't get an opportunity to play that much pickup game. Like when you said, oh, they have to sit 4 or 5 games. Like, you tell a kid today that there'd be a situation where they'd be playing, and if they lost, they'd have to sit out 4 or 5 games. They'd look at you cross-eyed and think you were crazy.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. We loved it. We had a few days where we actually, you know, beat them a few times. So it really made it a lot of fun, but we always gained a lot. You know, when you're playing against better players, stronger players, quicker players, they're going to make you better. And if I could just go back to one thing that just dawned on me as we were talking about this in terms of high school, one of the things my high school coach did in the summer was we would go up. There was a federal prison in Danbury. And in the summertime, our coach would take us up to the federal prison and we'd play against the inmates.
Wow. That would not happen today, I'll tell you that much.
No, but it was something that, we were, first time we went there, our eyes were like as big as half dollars. You know, it's like we had no idea what we were getting ourselves into. But we really, it was a real good learning experience for us. And we got tougher because we were playing against tougher kids, because if you didn't get tougher, you might as well just go home.
Yeah, I would say. Yeah, that's got to be really, again, a unique experience. As Jason said, something that, Jeff, you're not planning to take your team to the prison anytime soon and play, are you?
Yeah, I don't know if we have the right release forms here to bring our guys.
You can't really cover that liability?
I don't think so.
Yeah, I would guess no.
Can you make it a service project? That's the question.
Maybe.
That might be something you can only get away with in the 60s.
Yeah, I think that was a different, that was definitely a different era. But to your point, I'm sure that was a very unique experience and one that, you know, again, made an impression on you, not just from a basketball standpoint, but probably from a human being standpoint of just having an opportunity to be exposed to that environment. I'm sure there was, you know, again, as you said, your eyes were wide open to something that, you know, you probably hadn't experienced before as, you know, as a kid, and getting a chance to get in there and play those games was probably a lot of fun.
Yes, absolutely.
Registration is now open at www.headstartbasketball.com for this summer's Head Start Basketball Camps. We'll be hosting camps this summer in Strongsville, Westlake, Avon Lake, Oberlin, Brunswick, Highland Heights, Mentor, and Hudson. At Head Start Basketball, we care deeply about making a positive impact on the lives of young basketball players, both on and off the court. It's through building strong relationships with our players, parents, and coaching staff that we are able to use the game of basketball to enrich the lives of those we interact with, both inside and outside of our organization. We believe that our attention to detail, our growth mindset, and our commitment to lifelong learning allows us to help our players achieve their fullest potential. We are passionately committed to providing players, parents, and coaches with everything they need to reach their goals. These core values run through everything we do. Check out our website, www.headstartbasketball.com, and discover why you should attend a Head Start Basketball Camp this summer. Hope to see you there.
All right, so let's go to when, Jeff, you were a kid, and talk a little bit about your experience as a young player. And Ray, you can jump in here too. And just if you guys would just kind of talk about how you guys got started together in the game, and Ray, from the perspective of coaching your son, and Jeff, from the perspective of playing for your dad, and just kind of walk us through what that relationship looked like and how you guys went about navigating, you know, bringing Jeff up in the game.
Well, I would say, first, when I was really young, I don't think I appreciated how much my dad knew about it, and I almost didn't want to. It was kind of like that situation where you've got like the bratty kid who's you like, he would tell me the same things that another coach would tell me, and I would almost not want to believe it at first when I was really little. And when I finally started listening and doing what he said, it was amazing how much better and how quickly I improved. and I'm sure he's got more stories of not enjoying coaching me. I know I was probably not the easiest to coach, especially when I was younger, just because I think I liked being in the gym, but I definitely didn't love it. And the love for the game grew as I got older. As I experienced some success, and then also when I had friends that loved it too, because that was just either in the gym or at the park or in the driveway, like that's where my friends wanted to be. So I wanted to do it. And then, hey, all of a sudden I'm having some success with it. And it's, then it became a lot of fun.
Yeah, I think that when Jeff first started playing, he was really more interested in the social aspects of, you know, being on a team and being involved. And I don't really think he saw himself as a basketball player as a young kid. He wanted to be with his friends. And, you know, to get back to what he was saying earlier about his mom and her reaction to one of the games early on, what she actually said was, she said to me, you know, listen, I don't want to burst your bubble, but I don't think Jeff's going to be a very good basketball player. Says, you know what? I said, that's fine. If he doesn't like basketball, that's okay with me. If he likes something else, as long as he has a passion for something, that's all I care about. And the one thing that and this is what I said to my wife, the one thing we don't know is if that'll develop, you know, next week, next year, 3 years from now, or it might never develop, but it's a little too early to tell. So we'll just keep going along and we'll see what happens. And in fact, you know, I think it was his friendships that sort of kept him in the game early on, maybe up through eighth grade. And then he got a little bit more serious about it as he got into high school. And I honestly recall one summer league game at the boys club in Holyoke. where it was almost like somebody flipped a switch, because he made some moves in and around the basket, some drop steps that I had never seen him make in a game. And I had about four fathers come up to me after that game that were players and coaches. And they said, man, has Jeff improved from last year? I says, well, he's really been working at it hard, and it's really starting to show. And you could see, you know, that he was really enjoying being out there, and he was sort of really developing that love of the game. And that, as a dad, you know, that, forget as a coach, but as a dad, that is priceless just to see.
Did you ever find yourself, and this is one of the things that I struggle with my son. So he's in seventh grade, and I could have just substituted my son's name in for Jeff's name and had it be the exact same situation. My son definitely likes the social aspect of being on a team, and he likes basketball, doesn't love it. So my question is, did you ever find yourself as a kid who loved the game, and as a person who, you know, even, you know, again, you're still playing in men's rec leagues in your 40s. So you're obviously somebody who loves basketball. Did you ever find yourself feeling somewhat frustrated that that same love of the game didn't transfer immediately to Jeff?
No, honestly, Mike, I think I always expected that, you know, it might take time. So it really didn't bother me that he didn't take to it or love it right away. And I, you know, it's sort of funny when I think back to those years, you know, at the boys club or at the YMCA or Parks and Rec, there would be, you know, sixth, seventh and eighth graders, you know, that looked like they were pretty good players, and their dads would already be projecting them, you know, to they're going to be playing at Duke and
I've had those conversations.
Yeah. And the funny thing is that by the time those kids got to high school, they didn't like the sport anymore. They decided they wanted to do something else. And I saw that so many times. So I was never frustrated that Jeff didn't sort of love it immediately. He loved, you know, being with his friends initially. That was the big thing. But I think the more he played the game, then he got hooked. You know, he really liked it. And he really, once he developed sort of a love for the game, then he really worked really hard to become a really good player.
I think there's a great lesson there to be learned for any basketball parents who are out there listening. And that lesson is that you can't force that love of the game on your kid. And if you do, and just to go back to some of the things we've already talked about on this podcast, when you're having your 8-year-old or 9-year-old travel to multiple states, or you're having them play on a team with a coach who's not going to teach them fundamental skills, but is going to have them drilling the same play over and over again for 30 minutes during a practice, the odds of that kid still wanting to play basketball by the time they're an eighth grade or a freshman in high school, I think the odds of that happening are very, very low. So I think, you know, the way it obviously worked out, Ray, for you and Jeff, for you as a player, and, you know, it's the same thing that I'm trying to do with my son, is you keep providing them with opportunities based on what it is that they like about the sport. And that may be the social aspect and being part of a team. And as long as you keep providing those opportunities, there's still a chance that that light, you know, is going to come on. And Jeff, you're obviously a great example of that.
Well, and I would say another thing, kind of fast forwarding, even to when I was playing in high school, I mean, at that point, I definitely knew and appreciated everything that my dad was willing to share with me and teach me about how to play. But now that I'm a coach, I appreciate this even more. Like, he never once did anything to ever undermine what my high school coach was teaching or doing. Like, after games, we would do, I read this in a Grant Hill book, he would get his PGA, his post-game analysis from his dad. And I would get the same thing, but it was never like, what the heck was he thinking running that? Or what, he's using you the wrong. It was always like constructive stuff about how I was playing and how I could do better. But it was so, like I said, now that I'm in my high school coach's shoes, coaching a team, like, you just appreciate that so much, because I think parents, because of the whole specialization deal, they're forced to feel like they need to know it all and do it all. And I think they do it in a, not necessarily a bad way, but it can be really undermining when they try and like coach their kids from the sidelines or just like inject themselves that they know stuff that maybe they just don't, or they haven't had experience at the same level. And it's like, it pulls their kids in so many different directions. And I never felt that once. I always felt supported and, hey, I'm here to talk about stuff if you want, but I'm your dad. I'm not your coach.
Yeah, I think that's a great piece of advice. And I think it's one of the things that makes the relationship between a father and a son or a mother and a daughter or whatever the case may be, that if the parent doesn't try to live their life vicariously through their kid, you end up with a much healthier relationship. And I think you end up with a much healthier relationship with the sport. I'm curious to get your guys' opinion on this one. And that is, in my experience, what I've found is that when you have a parent who has played at a higher level of a particular sport, I find, at least in my experience, that those parents are the ones that have a more realistic view of what their kid is or isn't. And also those tend to be the parents that don't drive their kids so hard because they understand and realize that what took them to the level of whether it's basketball or some other sport was their love for the game and themselves driving that as opposed to the kid. And so I think what I've found is that parents who maybe haven't played a sport at a high level, those are the parents that tend to get kind of overwhelmed by the situation and sometimes make some of the bad decisions that we're talking about in terms of that early specialization and pushing kids to do things maybe before their maturity level really would dictate that you would go ahead and do that. Have you guys experienced that or am I off base based on your experiences?
Dad, you go ahead.
All right. Well, I don't think you're off base. I think that happens a lot. It probably happens more than it should. I guess my experience is that when parents do that, in the end, most of the time what I've seen is they end up turning their kid off to the sport, that they end up not being happy playing the game because they feel like they can't satisfy, you know, what their parent is trying to drive them to do and or satisfy, you know, the demands of being on a team and being part of a team. You know, they just feel like they're being pulled in two directions. And I think it ends up badly most of the time that the kid ends up not really enjoying playing the sport and ultimately ends up sort of giving it up.
And I think kind of taking a different route. And I think those parents that haven't are the ones that are more susceptible to drinking the Kool-Aid of, oh, you got to do this and you got to do this and you got to do this, because they've never had that experience of, well, actually, you don't. Like, you can go and play and love it and just continue to get better. And if it happens, it happens. But those, I think the parents who've had success on their own or played at a high level or coached at a high level, like, those are some of the most reasonable parents that I've ever worked with. Because they know, like, number one, if your kid's going to be successful, you got to love it. Because if you don't love it, you're not going to be willing to put in the work that it's going to take to be great. And some of those parents that I've worked with are the ones who are just like, you know what? I just want him to play as long as he can where it's fun and just keep that ball bouncing. That's Gary St. Jean. He used to run a camp that I went to, and then his son almost came and played for me. He ended up going to a different boarding school. But Greg, now he's coaching at St. John's. But I remember Gary came and brought his son Greg and toured, and it was going into my first year, and I was really nervous about kind of like what was my recruiting pitch going to be, and Coach St. Jean came in and he said, I mean, honestly, I want him to be happy. I hope he can continue to play. You know, he wants to push this and do a postgraduate year to have a chance to play Division I basketball, but I just want him to play and keep that ball bouncing as long as he can. And that line has stuck with me for a long time. just play as long as you can and keep it bouncing as long as you can, because eventually you're not going to be able to. Your body's going to break down, or you're just not going to be able to do it.
Yeah, I can attest to that. I wish I could. I wish I could still be playing a lot more.
Hey, when I was in high school, so this was 2005. I used to go up to the local rec center and play before I went to school. Like, there's a 5:30 crew that goes up and plays. We had an 84-year-old guy running up and down the floor, and I'm using the term running very loosely here, but he was playing at 84 years old, and the only reason he didn't stop playing was because some 40-year-old guy went up to block his shot, which is totally disrespectful to begin with, and he completely popped his shoulder out of the socket, and that was the end of his playing career. But he was 84 and he was still out there playing.
That's amazing.
Good for him.
that ball was still bouncing. So I can totally agree with you guys there that I think, Jeff, you're right on point. Another thing that I love that you said was the fact that I've used that same line with lots of different people who have asked my opinion about their kids. And you said something to the effect of, you know, they're never going to get to a high level. They're never going to really be great at the sport unless they love it. Because if you don't love it, you're not going to be willing to put in the amount of time it takes to be really good at something. And I think that's one thing that parents sometimes lose sight of. And, you know, they'll talk about their kid does this, their kid plays on this team, their kid does that. And a lot of times my question will be, well, how much do they work outside of their team practice? You know, and if the answer is, well, not really very much, then the answer is, well, they're probably not going to get to a very high level of achievement, because we all know that you better be putting time in outside of your team practices if you really want to excel. Now, if you just want to be on a team, depending on where you go to school or what your situation is, you know, that may work out for you. But if you want to be really good, all of us know that you got to put the time in outside of the required time from your coach.
Absolutely.
All right. So let's talk about, Jeff, your first experiences when you were back at Suffield and your dad was your assistant. Let's talk a little bit about the dynamic there during that time and what you guys remember from that experience.
So I had to really twist his arm to talk him into doing this, because he definitely is like an all-in type personality, all or nothing. And he thought about it for a while. And initially it was like, it started out, well, I think I can do like 2 days a week, because he was still working. And then it was like, well, you know, I can squeeze a third day. And by the end, I think by the time he met the kids, and by the time the season started, like, he was all in every day. but it was like, kind of selling him on it was hard to start. And I mentioned this the last time we spoke, but I think the dynamic between my dad and Dave Godin, who was my mentor and my advisor when I went to Suffield, like, the two of them were awesome. They were like kind of siblings separated at birth, coming back together. They had a lot of fun together. So that definitely helped, having the two of them together to kind of play off of each other. But it was just, it was awesome. It was like some of the best memories I have coaching is with him, on the sideline, and maybe a little bit because I got to boss him around a little bit. But
there you go.
I have to jump in here.
All right, yeah, we got to hear from Ray on this one.
I think I got to take over after that.
All right.
First, let me say that Jeff is 1,000% right about Dave Godin. I never really knew Dave, you know, very well, other than as Jeff's coach when Jeff PG'd at Suffield, and always, you know, always liked him, but never really got to know him very much. So that year was really an opportunity to get to know him, and he is really one special person. For him to do, you know, what he did, everything that he did for Jeff, just incredible. But I have to tell you a funny story of that year. And this was probably about mid-year. We were in a game, we were playing home. We really had the game in control. Maybe there was about 3 or 4 minutes left in the game. The refs weren't particularly good in the game, but we were ahead. And there was this just blatantly bad call against us. with about 3 or 4 minutes to go. And Jeff proceeded to start to get on the ref. And, you know, I called him, I said, "Coach, coach." And he just kept talking and talking. And so finally I screamed, "Jeff." And I was like, the whole gym just quieted down when I screamed at him. And he looked at me and he just walked back over to the bench. And it was, honestly, it was an embarrassing moment. I apologized to him, but at that moment I felt like his dad and not as his assistant coach. And and he did mention it to me after the game. I apologized. It never happened again. Because it shouldn't have happened in the first place. I mean, he knew what he was doing. He was trying to deliver a message. And if we got a T, we got a T. But I was just trying to avoid it.
What do you remember about that moment, Jeff?
I definitely remember glaring back, thinking, like, I'm getting yelled at by my dad right now, not my assistant. But it's something we can laugh about now. It was good.
Yeah, I think that's one of the interesting. I mean, I spent some years as an assistant, and one of the things that I think you know there's a fine line to be walked there by an assistant coach, where sometimes you know that your head coach is about to do something that they might regret in the near future, and so you sometimes try to step in, and then there's other times where you just kind of know, hey, I got to let this guy go. And sometimes you're not sure where that line is. And I know that I've walked on both sides of that line, where maybe I said something to the head coach that maybe I should have let go. And then conversely, there were times where maybe I should have stepped in and tried to get him to dial back. And so it's just interesting. Again, there's no obviously right or wrong answer in any situation, but as an assistant, that's one of those fine lines that you walk. And obviously the father-son dynamic in that case made it even more interesting.
Yeah. Well, it was one of the, you know, what he had was an inexperienced assistant coach. And so it really was the assistant coach making a mistake.
But I said this before too. I mean, I don't know that I would have made it through the year without Dave and my dad. There were times I walked into timeouts many times where I knew I had to call a timeout, but I didn't know what the heck we should draw up or what the next play was. And I was going, all right, what are we doing, guys? You know, and I definitely looked to their experience, so much. And that was something, like, especially for that year with my dad. And then Coach Godin stayed on with me for a couple more years. And we talked about kind of that passing of the torch moment until I really figured it out. But that allowed me to build a lot of confidence and start to figure out, all right, what I know what I need to do. And here's how I need to move forward in these situations. So it was like I learned so much that year from coaches, from the kids. It was an unbelievable experience. And just like I said, to be able to share it with my dad was awesome.
I just add to it, it was one of the most fun years of my life. Not mostly because Jeff was the coach, but the kids on that team were just phenomenal kids to be around. And it was really fun to show up at the gym every day. And of course, if you're on any team, you're going to have issues from day to day. Something comes up. One of the kids breaks a rule here or there. Now you got to deal with those sorts of things, the discipline and what have you. But it was, and Jeff hit it on the head. I was reluctant at first to tell him I would do it because I didn't want to just do it in a half-hearted way. If I was going to do it, I wanted to be all in. And from the first day of practice, you know, I was hooked. I knew I wasn't going to be able to show up 2 days a week. I knew I was going to be there every day, and I was going to be at every game.
Well, and you talk about the connections. Like, it's not just head coaches that make great connections with kids. I talk to kids, and I text with kids from that team, you know, all the time. And at some point in the conversation, they're either saying, "How's Coach Ray doing? Please tell him I said hi." You know, my dad and I went to the Final Four together when it was in Dallas, and we went out to dinner with one of the guys that was on the team who lives down in Dallas. And it was just like, it was so much fun to talk about the season. And like any player, like he remembered things about the season that both of us had forgot. And we had a lot of laughs, but it's just like the connection that you have with a specific team is just, it's hard to put it to words, but it's so special.
Yeah, I think one of the things that'd be really cool about that, you know, year when you guys were together is, even if you're, let's say, Ray, you're just watching your, you know, you're watching your son's team from the stands. And yeah, after the game, you might call and talk about it. And, you know, you're having discussions and you're watching the team play and you might have some opinions about what they could do differently. But when you're actually on the inside and you're sharing it on that intimate level where you're in the locker room, you're at practice every day, and you're both involved in every aspect of that team's life for that season, just to be able to share that has to make it just incredibly special, as again, as opposed to just, you know, one person's the coach, the other person is sitting in the stands watching, where you can kind of have an idea of what's going on by having conversations, but it's not the same as actually being in the trenches together.
Yeah.
Without question. Because, all the backdrop, you know, of the kids, you know, more of what makes them tick. And to know that, you know, it's your son that's coaching this team, and just his rapport with the kids, that was sort of phenomenal to watch. You know, because Jeff wasn't a whole lot older than some of these kids when he took over as the head coach.
I mean, I was 24. I was 24 years old, and we had 19-year-old kids on the team. So I was more like the big brother to most.
Yeah, of them. Very close to being a peer.
Yeah.
But by the end of the season, the growth in Jeff from the first game to the last game was incredible. It really was an unbelievable thing to watch. And sometimes I just sit and I sort of try and think through, you know, some of those games and just those kids, you know, some of the laughs that you had with those kids, some of the crazy things we might do at the end of a practice just to get the kids to laugh a little bit. It was really, really special.
Yeah, that's very cool. What if you had to pinpoint from that first season that Jeff started and now you've kind of been able to watch him develop as a coach over the years, what would you say are one or two things that he's really gotten better at over the course of his coaching career that you've been able to observe both from the inside and then now obviously from a further away perspective?
Wow. Well, I can tell you that he does an unbelievable job now, especially with in-game adjustments, you know, changing a defense or, you know, doing something in terms of changing the pace of the game. And then another thing that strikes me when I'm watching these games now, I mean, the coming out of timeouts, you know, always I'm sort of amazed at sort of, you don't usually have a whole lot of time, sometimes 30 seconds, and he'll draw something up and I'll just shake my head going, wow, that was pretty good. A game recently, now Jeff may remember, I certainly can't, but it might've been like two or three games ago. And it was really an important game. About the third quarter, all of a sudden he changed the defense from man to man to zone. And it really disrupted the other team. It was amazing how the flow of the game just changed on that one decision. You may remember the game better than me, Jeff.
Yeah, I don't want to give up too much info. Tournament games coming up.
I'm just kidding. Yeah, you don't have to. You don't have to draw up the whole play for us.
Yeah, no.
And you got a week and a half till this episode will come out, so you got time, man. All right, time.
Perfect.
No, we're not going to send the audio to Sean. Okay.
All right. Excellent. I think that's something that definitely I've spent a lot of time trying to get better at, and I think I'd be the first to admit when I started as a head coach, like I clearly had a passion for the game, but the X's and O's, that was not my strength. It was going to be connecting with kids and getting them to play hard and getting them to play together. But I've just tried to spend a lot of time with coaches that are a lot smarter than me and just learn what I like about what they do and things that I think fit my personality better. But Yeah, that's I think where I've grown the most is kind of the tactical side of the game for sure.
I think my favorite thing to do is when a coach calls a timeout because I put a different defense in, I completely just change what I'm running because he spent the last minute talking to the coach or talking to the kids about what I'm doing. Yep. So then we switch it up, and then like 4 minutes of game time pass, and then I go back to that same defense. The kids don't remember. I coach middle school basketball. They're like, oh, what was going on? Like, I don't remember what they just did. So like, it's just completely switching it up. And you think that coaches will learn you can't go ahead and do that because you know that they're going to change something up. You know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely. It's that's the fun part of the game for me now is because there's so many good coaches out there. And I mean, I know there's games we go into where we go into the half and we could be playing pretty well. And I'm thinking, man, I know he's going to make some adjustment at halftime. What's it going to be? So you're just trying to play that chess game in your head for that 10 minutes of, all right, what do we got to be prepared to change when we come back out here?
So here's the question I have for you, Jeff, and this is one of the things that I'm just interested in hearing your take on it. How much time do you spend, like, in a practice? Let's say you're prepping for a specific opponent. So now you've got, you know, your state tournament coming up. How much time do you spend on the scouting process and prepping your team for what the opposing team is going to do versus how much do you just buckle down and say, we're going to do what we do? And yeah, we got to understand a little bit of the other team's tendencies. We might want to know who their best players are, but how much time are you spending on the scouting and preparation for a specific opponent part of the game? You know, again, let's say as you're going into a state tournament game.
Definitely not as much as I used to. I know, like, I would come probably my first 3-4 years, I would get like pages of notes on tendencies on, and I would probably spend 3/4 of a practice figuring out how we're going to counter whatever they're trying to do. And even within scouts, like, I'll talk to my assistants, if they're going to watch a game and get a scout. Like, all I want to know is who are their key guys, what kind of defenses do they show, and what are they trying to accomplish on offense? And it's not even like, well, they're going to run flex or they're going to run horn sets, or no, they're trying to get it into their big guys, or they're going to play a lot of inside out. And so it's just to kind of prepare our guys for the big concepts. Cause I think the biggest thing I found, at least at the high school level, is I don't think the guys, we don't have enough practice time to dedicate to that. It's not fair to over prepare and fill their heads with stuff that they're just not going to absorb for one game. So I definitely spend more time focusing on what we're going to do and try and accomplish. Like, sure, we'll probably try and talk about how we're going to defend a certain action that they do a lot, but that's kind of it. We spend a lot more time focusing on us than other teams. Because at the end of the day, the team's got to defend us. And we've spent a whole year at this point trying to get good at what we're going to do. So I think the objective for us is to be better at what we do than they can be at what they do.
Yeah, I'm 100% with you on that at the high school level. I think a lot of times that you can spend a lot of time going over and talking about what the other team does, and yet – sometimes your kids don't even know what you do, let alone try to memorize and remember what another team's sets are going to be or this or that. I think if you focus, to your point, on the general tendencies and maybe an action or two and just, you know, who their best players are, I think in the long term, you're probably better off and you're going to be more prepared and your kids are going to know what you're supposed to do and not be worried about what the opponent's going to do.
Yeah, absolutely.
Guys, this has been tremendous. I don't know, before we get out of here, if there's anything else that we haven't talked about that either one of you would like to share. I think it's been really interesting to sort of hear, again, the dynamics between the two of you when you coach together, the dynamics as a parent and a son. We can't thank you enough for jumping on with us. If you wouldn't mind sharing out again, Jeff, how people can get in contact with you. Ray, certainly if you want to share out some contact information, how people can reach out to you. And then if there's anything else that we didn't hit on that you guys think is relevant to our conversation tonight, please go ahead and share that now.
Yeah, I can definitely be reached by email at jeff@proskillsbasketball.com. So if any coaches have any questions or want to bounce any ideas off me, I'm always open to sharing and definitely learning from other coaches. So please, please, please don't hesitate to reach out.
And I would just say, if somebody, for whatever reason, would like to reach me, they should probably do it through Jeff, and then he can.
All right.
He can.
That's fair enough.
Hey, Mike, I'll just add one final thing if I can.
Absolutely.
Because I think this relates to other young coaches. I think one of the things that Jeff has done unbelievably well as a young coach is he's reached out to other people. He's networked unbelievable. As a result of that, he's been really fortunate to meet some incredible people that have been unbelievably helpful to him, like Don Showalter and Tate Slot and Matt King. And I think those are probably all names that you know, from Snow Valley. But I think Jeff was smart enough to know he didn't know everything, but that there were people out there that would be willing to help him learn. And he took advantage of that. And I think it's a credit to those people that are willing to sort of pay it forward and help someone else. And I know now, too, that Jeff is that kind of person. He's willing to pay it forward and help other young coaches out as well.
Yeah, I think that that's something that obviously we at the podcast have been able to experience with the guys that you've mentioned. And, you know, obviously Jeff, same thing for you being willing to jump on, and now for a second time, and I'm sure there'll be a third time at some point here going forward. You know, that's really what it's all about, is being able to share your knowledge with other people and then learn from some people who have come before you who have different experiences in the game. And I think that today's world, it's really easy to be able to connect if you're willing to put in that time to build relationships with people. And that's really what I feel like we've been able to do with the podcast, and we're going to continue to work on that from our end to connect all the people that we've been fortunate enough to have as guests. And certainly that's something that you've been able to do through your relationship with Pro Skills and your relationships with the guys at Snow Valley and the work you've done with USA Basketball. All those things are connected, and it's really how we all get better and how we all help to improve the game of basketball.
Well, you guys are doing an amazing job, and this is just an awesome platform to connect coaches, for coaches to continue to learn and grow. And I really appreciate everything you guys are doing. I listen to everything you put up there, and I take pages of notes every time you put a new podcast out. So I really appreciate what you guys are doing. Please, please keep doing what you're doing.
Yeah, we will. We're having a blast. You know, I've said it multiple times here on the show that Jason and I are having a ton of fun being able to talk to great coaches and people. And we're just, you know, we learn a lot every time we do it. And our hope is that people that are out there listening, and they are taking notes, and they are being able to, you know, connect with people that they might not be able to.
Hopefully you're not taking notes on our NBA predictions, because most of them are not turning out very good.
Yeah, don't throw those back in our face. But we're having fun with those episodes too, even though it's just a couple of schmoes just talking NBA hoops. So
well, thank you guys. I appreciate it.
Yep. Absolutely. Ray, it's been a pleasure getting a chance to talk to you, and Jeff, obviously, thanks for jumping on again. And we will be in touch very soon. And thanks to you for being a part of the roundtable episodes. And I know you said that you're watching our goofy videos that
put
out there. The suspense is killing you to see who's going to win the book every week, every month. So we're having a lot of fun with that too.
I can't question it, because I've seen my name go in the jar the last 2 months. So
yeah, we're trying to be on the up and up. So we're not freezing any of the names, or, you know, making them on sandpaper or anything like that, so they come out, you know. So hopefully one of these months we'll pull your name out of the hat, and we'll be able to get you a book. But guys, we can't thank you enough, and to everyone out there, we will catch you on our next episode. Thanks. Head Start Basketball's Player Development Academy offers Cleveland area players a unique opportunity to improve their basketball skills. Regardless of a player's age, skill level, or position, training with Head Start Basketball will elevate your game to the next level. Do you want to improve your ball handling, become a better shooter, or develop into a more skilled, confident player? Our academy classes offer training that's designed to do just that. Our training sessions are innovative and will have you learning skills that are transferable to actual games. We have 4 different class skill levels for boys and girls,
ages 4 and up. All Player Development Academy classes will be held at the Strongsville Recreation Center. For more information or to get registered, please visit www.headstartbasketball.com.
Thanks for listening to the Hoopheads podcast, brought to you by Head Start Basketball.